see? And he didn't go ahead. Now, when he got through, I said, "Well, Buster," I says, "I asked that lady one day about us getting married. And I said, she says, I think that you're a fine fella, Mac, and upright in every way, and be very nice. But," he says, "I'd like to, but I'm afraid Buster'd be jealous of me." And Buster just turned red in the face, and the rest of them all went to laughing at him, and he couldn't say a word.
Miss Weaver, I missed the first part of that.
Did you miss it?
First part of it.
I say, "Buster is on the cover, but you know her, you know how she talks, you know, and everything goes ahead."
Well, she's a customer, ain't she?
And
do you see much of her?
I see her occasionally. She comes, I get out there to talk to her a little on a business deal.
Where does she live?
And she lives on Springs. Now she gives these the boys this place up here, and she's got her home over at Orange Springs. Fort McCoy, or I believe it's down at Eureka's where it is. That's where it was. She had a place down there.
Well, I hadn't seen her in some time. Is that the truck?
So she is wanting to trade her truck for this car out here, this station wagon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I need a truck really worse than come in handier in ways, and the ways it doesn't.
Well, you know, I tried to find a truck for you. It broke down before I got out there.
Yeah, you told me about that. So that Buster began to say, when Ina drove off, says to these people, "You see, well, this lady is reared out here at Zetrow, right close to Zetrow, and I when I first came to Florida, her husband was my doctor, done all my dental work, you know."
Mm-hmm.
And
now who's that?
Is Mrs. Sharehouse.
Oh, yeah.
Now
yeah.
Her name then. Well, she married, her first name was that she married was Powermore, and he was a tooth dentist doctor.
Yeah.
And he did my dental work, you see, and I went to him and checked my teeth every year. And she remembered, she had asked me, she hadn't seen me in a long time, she says, "What's your name?" And I said, "No, talking to Donna about trading, you see."
Mm-hmm.
And Buster, and I told her, and she says, "Brooks, brother?" And I says, "Yes." She says, "Well, I haven't seen you in a long time." And she is talking very nice, and her husband sitting over in the chair, you see, that's waiting for her to get there. And I'd known her for years, you see, before I knew Mr. Sheriff, one she is married to now. Her first husband died.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to them. I'd see him very often going to Gainesville, stopping up, making up. But I hadn't seen her about two or three times since her first husband died. So that we was talking there, and so Buster wanted to be smart, you know, and that's the way he put jokes, you know, and likes to do that, you know. And he, and Ina drove off, he said, "I've been trying to get Mac and Ina in together and get them married." And says, "I think it'd make a good pair." And you know how she talks, you know, and she'd been talking kind of like Jack talks, you know, and just say anything. And she don't mean any harm by it. She just means to take it as a joke, you know. Go on.
I love to hear it talk.
Well, so that I says, I just stayed there. I just saw them, let Butch go ahead and tell them. They all kind of laughed, you know. And so that when he got through, I says, "Buster," I says, "I mentioned that Ina one time about us getting married. And I says, she said that I was a mighty fine fella, said he'd be a nice man, and all like that. And I had a good reputation. But I says, she said, the one reason that I came. And I'm afraid Buster will be jealous of you, and I can't do it." Oh, Buster blushed, and Mr. and Ms. Sharehouse, they just hollered and laughed, and everybody laughed at Buster, and his face looked like got redder and redder. Well, I pull out on a lot of people, you know, and they tell a joke on me about it like that. Just go ahead. Well, I just say it as a joke. I don't mean no harm by it. Just I don't mind anyone teasing me or kidding me, not a bit in the world. And if I say anything, I don't mean harm by it. And but that was, I couldn't keep. I believe I got busted about the worst of it, and I pulled on him. Yeah.
Maybe that's why you got sand in your carburetor.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how come that sand in that carburetor, but it was, it had lots of it in there, and I got Frank to bring me another, and I didn't get Buster to put it on for me. I don't know where Buster put it in. I believe it's put in before I got it. But I could tell there's something wrong, and I knew that there's one or two things that had to be. Well, Buster wanted to tune it up, and I let him. I thought that that's what he'd fix, you know. And that's before I took it off, you see. And he said, he fixed there, worked on everything but that. Took a head off, adjusted the valves and all of this, and changed that and got them where it doesn't hit good. Put in a new set of spark plugs and charged me $10. They didn't want to charge me anything for labor because I'd go and help him pull cars in, you know. I just had helped him the week before. But all that didn't come to $10 he done. And I reached him a $10 bill. I told him to fix it, you know. I just let him go ahead. Well, the car didn't run any better than the same thing. And I told Frank to bring me a new one. I looked at it and didn't take it off, you know. So that he hadn't brought it, and he hadn't brought it. Me and another boy and I decided we'd take it off and look in there. And it had sand in it. Some of it stuck and wouldn't even work in it. It had been sitting rough. They could have picked that. Now listen, they could have picked that sand up over in the scrub last year. They had it over in the scrub.
Oh, yes.
And that could have got in there somewhere.
That way. They get out in all sorts of territory over there. Don't
and another thing, their hunters go. There's so many hunters. They don't want you hunting in the place. They may put that in your gas or in the carburetor so it won't run, and make you have to be pulled in. Oh, hunters will do that too. Especially all that big bunch of deer hunters from different places. And they've got two classes over there. One wants to use dogs, and others don't want dogs over there. And I think they kill a lot of people's dogs over there, those don't want dogs around. Well, now that's unfair. Man pays his life to go out and hunt. And I think that they ought to have a law that every man have to pay so much to be hunting without a dog. Because that's the only way you're going to kill a deer. A dog make it get up and let it run. You can't go out and walk up deer and walk one up maybe for two or three days and it get up and it's a doe. Her got little old nub, not 3 inches, not five, it'll have to be 5 inches before they can kill that buck. You think I'd go and spend my money and waste it looking for measuring a deer's horn before I shot it? No, sir. You can't kill a doe.
Yeah.
They just let them stay there till they die.
Well, if you use your dog, you can let him run and get that pleasure. You don't kill the deer.
Well, lots of them rather like to hear the dogs better than they like to kill the deer. All right, these other fellas, they want to get a lot of the hunters out, you know, so they can walk around and some of them's got plenty of money, you know, and they can walk around and hunt up does, you know, nobody much out there. They'll kill them a doe and cat off, too. Those kind of hunters.
You know, the thing that just sticks in my mind, Mr. Weaver, I don't know how that had just dropped clear out of my mind, is those singing schools that we used to have all around in the country.
Well, and I often say, I still keep up with it. See, I turn my radio and hunt them up all over the country, you see, and listen to them. And I stay up there until, sometimes I get up at 5 o'clock. Yeah, but 5 o'clock in the morning is the best time in the world to get that. Boy, you can really hear it then. It sounds better. At 5 o'clock in the morning when it comes on. Now, you get Nashville. Let's see, what is there?
WSM is what?
WSB is Charlotte.
I'm not almost speak it, but I just can't say.
Well?
WSM, I believe it.
Well,
I believe that is. If that ain't it, it's almost that. And You can turn it, you just keep turning it on, you keep turning it on there. Now on my radio, a small one, I just bought a cheap one, but I've had it 7 or 8 years and it hasn't given me, I think I spent $7 on it, and it still plays good. And I was lucky to get one to last that long as much as I play one that I'm sitting around the house and I don't feel like getting up and going nowhere. And most of the time don't have any way of going.
I didn't know you played radio.
I have one that's small and now sitting on the table. I got so much junk you can't see it.
I don't remember hearing it.
And I've got a television now. I could have a little work done on there and have it fixed up, but I can't look at a television on account of my eyes.
Now,
I tried a little work
there. What do you turn on at 5 o'clock in the morning? WSM?
Yeah, WSM.
That's the station you listen to.
Yeah.
You don't listen to these other stations.
Well, you go ahead and turn that on. Now, if you want to get the string band, it turns way back over at another place on my radio. Mine's just a cheap one, and it's not like you see, if I turn the number, they say, well, mine may not have that number on it. It's a cheap radio, but it's good. I bought it just to.
Well, you've got several numbers
I get lots of Texas and get a lot of places. You can get
and
Cuba
you get the
over.
Same, you mean you get the music you're talking about?
No, you don't get the music over all of that. There's some places that give it. Every once in a while you can get it in Carolina and different places, but they don't give it regular like these do. This is Moll Singing Convention. That's what it says, Moll Singing Convention.
And you get that at 5 o'clock in the morning?
5 o'clock in the morning or 8:30 at night is when it comes on. Now, you can turn the radio on. I don't know where you can get over television or not.
Moll Singing Convention.
I don't believe you could. I don't believe you get that over television.
Yeah.
Well, it's a whole lot better than anything. I've heard a few times that they'd be over the television.
Where did they have them singing conventions? At the church or the schoolhouse?
Oh, up there?
Anywhere they go.
Oh,
I mean in their old age.
Oh, old age. They had it churches and schoolhouse.
Yeah.
The one that's where they're both closest to.
Yeah.
And he's a place. They let them sing and have those singing schools in either one.
Yeah.
Because that was sacred music, sacred, you know, back at that time.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they let you sing those songs in a schoolhouse now or not.
Oh, they let you sing anything you want to sing. Let me tell you, Mr. Weaver, the schoolhouses are all in Gainesville now, and you see.
Yeah.
And they're all big things. And then you had little community schools.
Oh, well, we have to put up just what they want, you know. You see, they took everything away from the little towns, you see.
Yes.
Caritas and Gainesville.
Yeah.
They're going to go telling you what you can do out here in Lodgeway County.
That's right.
Not going to be long. They'll come out here and tell you, you can't have so-and-so, you got to do so-and-so.
That's right.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, but listen, they tax you, then they put a penalty on. Then they won't if you hire that, they won't give you a credit. They won't give you a diploma.
Oh, no.
You can't get a diploma. You got to go to their school and do just what they say do.
And just do what they say.
You got to do that.
Okay.
And. You can't have prayer in school anymore. I bet you they'd soon rule out that kind of singing.
But them little country singings where they all got together and singing. Now you take all these roughnecks around. You see, they got to do things, Mr. Weaver. They can't sit at home.
Well,
on
you
the
take
porch.
a lot of those fellas that get out that would have went to church and Sunday school if they had them in those singing conventions.
Sure.
A lot of them would have liked that, and maybe changing the quiz.
Sure.
Yeah.
And why, you take some of these.
If you went off and done those, or you got drunk at those, better not get drunk at one of those and cut up and do nothing. One of those churches back then.
No, they didn't do that.
They went to you and told you, and if you done it again, they'd call the law and put you in jail. And they put a fine on you, too.
Well, they didn't do it then. They didn't get drunk around those things.
No.
Mm-mm.
If someone got drunk, somebody carried him away by her. He went to jail once. He cut up just a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is a good thing, I guess, for me that I came up at that time. Because I'd probably been bad just like that as a boy.
Why, you know, yeah.
I knew what I'd guess when I got home. If I'd done anything wrong, if anybody reported me, don't you think your uncles and aunts wouldn't tell on you if you done something, tell your dad and mother back there. Don't you think your dad and mother didn't tell you up, too? Because if I was in the crowd, they got me, says, well, you was in the crowd, and you'll know next time not do it, and they'd tie me up, too. Now, I'm not kidding you. Well, it was good for me. I appreciate it. It didn't make me mad.
Yes, sir.
You know, I could go up there and take them, they'd hit me hard, and I knew it was that they was right about a thing, and it didn't hurt me much. They'd come across it with a big whiz and hit hard.
Yes.
And I figured that the Lord is taking care of me on that. That's the only one I could figure that it was helping me. And I still believe it.
Well, sir, you could take now, Mr. Weaver, you could take one of them singing out in the country or in town, don't matter where it is. Now, you see, that would give people a place to go.
I reckon
so. And where they can see everybody. You can see all your neighbors and people from the 21st district to the county, like we used to say.
Yeah. And they had a place to go, and it wasn't a place. It was a place to do right and be quiet.
It's all public. All
anybody could go to it. They didn't have to belong to the churches to go to them or anything.
No,
go to those things. It didn't make any difference about that.
And
if you like singing, if you didn't want to do nothing but listen, you could go down and listen.
And you could walk up and pass time of day with anybody.
Yeah. And people are everybody nice and shake hands and glad to see each other, you know, and they pass off the time.
That's right.
Now then, the young people, most of them, haven't got a place to go on at some of these
nightclubs
or
like
something
that.
Like that. And
no. And
if you don't drink, just like I used to go around with some of my best friends, you know, they all like to drink a little bit, you know. I didn't like it and didn't drink. And we'd all go out and some of us would pay some time, the others pay the next time, you know. All right, I'd buy a fifth of whiskey and give it to them, they'd all drink it. But I didn't go out with these people that got drunk and cut up and tried to get in anything like that. They were good, nice people. But they liked to go out and have dinner and take a drink. Well, I'd buy a fifth of liquor, you know, and just let them drink it. I didn't want it. I came out better than any of them did. They would buy and give it to them, and I wouldn't find a drink to.
Liven them up and didn't bother you.
Well, it didn't bother me. I just, they didn't get drunk. They'd have got drunk and disordered or anything. I wouldn't have got me out of class anymore. I don't cater to that. I don't like it.
The truck stop's a pretty good place to eat dinner now, isn't it?
Yes, it's pretty good. Or down here at Tradewind, but you can't get dinner on Sundays up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to go down Tradewind to get dinner, you know, and I have company. It's cheaper for me to go ahead and take guests out, you know, than it is for me to try to fix and cook it. And I used to come down there at the truck stop, you see.
And they don't cook on Sunday?
No, through the week I can get, but I can't get the breakfast, I can't get dinner at night, you know, down there. I have to go at noon.
Just at noon.
Just at noon's all I can get, you see. Well, you see.
Well, that'll hold you one good meal.
Well, it helps. I can cook, but you see, cooking for one, and I'm on a strict diet, and so much of the time I have to be so particular about what I eat, drink or do. I don't drink anything. See, I drink a few Coca-Cola now, and the doctor's made me quit drinking coffee.
That's the main thing. What all do they have down there for dinner, for lunch,
Mister? Which at the truck stop?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have several different things. They got about three or four different meats, and then three vegetables, and they'll have it on there, and it changes every day. You don't have the same thing every day.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same menu every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. Now, down here at Tradewind, do you ever see
your friends over there at the truck stop?
See who?
You run into people you know over there.
Oh, at truck stop at Mickenoke?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see lots of people down there.
Yeah.
lots of people comes in there and eat. They used to do a big business when they kept open breakfast all day long. You could do a good business now. That's what we need is a good restaurant and make it open, stay open. Yeah. They used to stay open when they first came out and opened up there. They used to open up about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning and stay till about 10 or 11 at night.
Yeah.
And they had about 5 or 6 working there for them. They say they can't get nobody to work now.
Yeah.
Go in there and don't want to work.
Yeah.
And if you ask them to work to do, they just quit.
Yeah. Well, now. I see Tommy Boyd's wife in there every now and then.
Well, she's the waitress there all the time.
Yeah.
Of course, she goes back and helps cook too sometimes. Yeah. See, sometimes they have to do the cooking. They haven't got a cook there.
Well, now you see that's it.
And they have to go in there and cook. You see, and it's too much for the two running.
Yeah.
If someone go there and learn the first thing before you go in business, it's best to go and work for someone a while and then go in there.
Yeah.
I went to work at sawmills one time. I was going to the sawmill business. Lumber selling there was high, you know, $35 just any kind of two before. Well, it didn't cost about about $1.50 a day is what they paid for a man to work 10 hours. A sawyer and a woods foreman, and I was a woods foreman. I got the same thing as the saw, and looked after everything out in the woods and cut the timber. They wanted to build a stuff cut. I cut that for them. You all think that I'm 2,000 years old if I keep telling you. But I started all this when I was a kid, you know. I worked at sawmills when I was just a kid. When we get too far, you know, if there's a sawmill right close, I'd go and make me some money and buy. My dad and mother didn't have to buy me any clothes for us.
Yeah,
we got out and worked that out.
You didn't get any money for helping your dad.
I worked for him until I was 20 years old and in the fall, and I was 21, 18th of March. Next spring, and I told him if he'd set me free, he didn't have to give me one penny and let me go to work himself.
Yeah.
And he got all we'd make 12, 13 bales of cotton a lot of times, and they got that. Of course, I happened to be in the middle, about 14 in family, and somebody had to stay home and work, couldn't go to school. and it happened to catch me. And I'd have went to school after I got 21 and finished, but just as I was 21 18th of March and I had to register 5th of June to go in service, and bang, she went.
Yeah.
I didn't go back to school then.
Yeah.
I didn't work my way through school. Didn't go to school, but after they kept me tied up in that for over a year, I decided, I'll just have to pick out what I got. I'm getting so old now to go back and come start up again, and I'm not going to do it.
Well, now the boys, Mr. Weaver, it never cost the old man any money for the boys to work. You see, he never paid them.
No.
But whenever the work was slack and they laid by what they were doing, they could go out and pick up a little money.
Yeah.
You could work at a sawmill or use your team somewhere and haul a little bit.
Well, sometimes we'd catch up with all our work, had nothing on the farm and somebody else behind. We'd go and help them, you see, and they'd pay us something. I think I got 40 cents a day for 10 hours or no, from sun up to sundown to chop cotton and hoe.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of money then, you see. That bought something for it. And you go out there, $10 bill. 40 cents a day is a lot more than $10 today.
You could buy, how much would a good Barlow knife cost you then, Mr.?
10 cents. Vance of the King Blades got to cost me 15.
Yeah.
Long time, then they went from, went to 15 and 25.
25, I seem to remember, a good Ingersoll watch would cost you a dollar.
65 cents a person now of a bowl cost me. Order from Montgomery Ward, 65 cents.
But it
carried it you 3 years and 6 months and sold it for 50 cents.
<That's>
No kidding.
That's right.
For some of those little things like that I'd always forget. Did I tell you about my first trip to go out to buy furs?
Uh-huh.
That's a good one.
And now this Ingersoll watch would last you.
Yeah, here's one I've had 3 or 4 years.
You mean you just bought that?
It's, I've had it 3 or 4 years.
And it's still working?
Listen at it. Runs better now than it did when I first got it. Right, I got it adjusted better now than it was when I first bought it.
Is that right?
I like to know. I've got one or two of them up there. See, I can't, and working, I'm too rough on good ones. It costs $25, $30 a year. Yeah. I've got one up there I'm going to keep. It's a 21 Jewel Hamilton.
Yeah.
I trade a good dog for it. And they'll cost you $150 if you can find one of them now to buy one of them. Mm. But I'm going to keep I've got to have some work done on it, cleaned out and work done on it.
You know, Mr. Weaver, the way it used to be, a man could have a pretty good outfit, everything, a watch and pocket knife.
Anything you wanted. We had more
clothes to work in and Sunday clothes, and you still wouldn't have $25 in it, would you?
No, you take 1921, I went up in Tennessee, and I wanted to stay up there a while. And I went around up there, you see, and looking for jobs. And I was over around Lawrenceburg and in there, and I had a cut and lived over close to Collinswood. And I went over there, and there's a man running a sawmill over right close. And my cousin told me that, asked him if there's anybody, any work around there, that I might pick up a job. I wanted to work some. And he said, Robert Whitten over there has got a sawmill, and he says, he was wanting a hand or something. And he says, I'm going by that and I'll ask him. And he asked him and he told him yes. Mm-hmm. And he told me the next day, he said, I got you a job. That sawmill. Well, I'd worked the sawmill before, you see, and cut timber. That's what they wanted me to do, is to cut timber. Pull across, cut the saw from sun up to sundown. I reckon what I got a month.
$30.
$17 a month and board. I went over and took it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tell you what, so I'd been around over in Lawrenceburg and all those places. There wasn't no jobs opening, no kind. I worked up by some of them was behind with the work, you know, and I'd get out there and plow and went in blacksmith shop and sharpened some of the tools for them. Didn't charge him for it, you know, because. Of course, I stayed with him some, you know, and I just worked for him, looking for a job. When I came down to Florida,
now
I was 2 weeks on, 2 weeks.
Over there at Lawrenceburg, Mr. Weaver,
yeah.
You travel light. You didn't have to care much with you.
No, well, I always tried to carry a good dress suit and all like that and 2 or 3 good shirts and things that I just, that you know, necessary to carry, you know, and how. And carry out my work clothes, you know. I had a large handbag, you know, those large ones they made back then, and a big suitcase. I carried them full when I went anywhere because I didn't want to have to spend the money to buy stuff and leave it at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't cost me anything to carry it. I'd go it on the train, you know, and I'd just check it in and get it when I got off the train.
Well, now, you didn't travel so light then, did you?
No. And
what do you have to have a Sunday suit for?
What'd you say?
What do you have to have a Sunday suit for?
I went to church and went anything I wanted to go to.
And you had to have a Sunday suit to go to church?
Yeah, you take people don't dress. I don't dress like I used to. I used to get up every Sunday morning, put on a white shirt every Sunday morning, dress and polish my shoes every Sunday.
Yeah.
But
and wear a suit of clothes.
And I you wore a coat to church back at that time.
And it matched your breeches.
Yes, sir. It looked odd to see someone come out there. Now, long in the summer, they would get a white pair of pants and a blue serge coat and wear it together. That went together some.
Yeah.
Did you remember that, don't
yeah.
you? Seeing that looks pretty good. You dressed up, you know.
How far back did that go? Way back?
That goes back into the 20s and teens
yeah.
and all like that.
Yeah, does it go back in the teens?
Yeah.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, I remember. I remember the first hunt I was ever on was 1906.
You mean them white duck trousers went back in the teens?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it went back in 13, 14, 15, and all back in there, there in Alabama. Yeah, before the war. Yeah, and after too. Once in a while, you see this easy soil, people, you know, that clay land up there in Alabama and Tennessee, that dust, you can't wire it one time, you got to clean them. You got to clean them when you wire them one time, that dust up there.
Yeah.
And if it's muddy, you sure have got to clean them. And we didn't dress like we do now. We just dress and relaxing because I'm not going to, now if I go to church now, I dress. If I have to go to games or go up on business or go up out shopping, I always dress now.
Just put on your street clothes. You don't put on a suit.
Yeah, I put on a white shirt and I go to Gainesville. Of course, usually I want to go to the courthouse and go and see about some business, you know. And I still, because, you see, they had me on the jury up there for so long, ever since 1922. I'd stay here a year before I could serve on the jury. And they had me nearly once and twice a year, nearly all that time. Last year, by the way, they caught me again. Me, 75 years old.
Did you ever wear in those high stiff collars?
Yeah, that picture I showed you is one of them.
Yeah, that's right.
And a blue serge suit, French serge, which would cost you $200, maybe $300 by it now if you could find one.
Yeah.
I doubt you're finding one of them now.
Blue serge suit.
I bought it in 1918, just before 1917. His oldest brother got after me for buying it, and you going off in service? I said, well, when I come back there, he may not have any, and I want one when I get back to wear. But he said, suppose you don't come back. I said, well, some of y'all can have good suit to wear. That's what I told him. I said, you all have a good suit to wear. I said, don't let them all read it up. I said, if something happens to me, I said, let it go. That's the way you got to go in service. I didn't want to go now. I don't think we ought to have wars, but they're going to have them. The Bible says you're going to have them as long as time lasts. Instead of getting better, they get worse all the time. More of them than they used to be.
Yes, Mr. Weaver, you haven't been over here in a long time, have you?
No, I'm behind my talking either. Well, I'll tell you, I don't mind talking. I like to hear someone else talk. And I keep thinking that next time I'm not going to say a word and make you do talk. I would learn something myself.
Yeah.
Of course, if I was in my childhood the second time, I'd be too old to learn. So I'm going to make you talk next time.
Well,
they haven't got anything to say, Mr. Lewis.
I don't know.
They don't know.
Let me. I want to drink this for. God's
phone.
I can't keep up with my old. Have you shown him your friends?
Oh, the Colts? No,
yeah.
We wanted to.
Oh,
you haven't.
Have you seen the Colts?
You haven't seen our
Colts
yet?
Not since last.
Oh,
you
got to
look at him.
Well, oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Now, you talk about some customers. They are ready for you. Anything you want to do, they're ready, aren't they?
Yeah,
they
sure
those Colts is?
Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
We got some now. We
how many got? How many got out there? How old are you?
Two of them.
One's 14 months and one's 12 months.
Well, I've seen them then. I've seen them when they're a little bitty fellas.
Yeah,
I haven't seen them lately.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them since they got grown.
They're all
grown.
Well, you take the one up right close to me there, just across the lane there. By the way, it's a fine one too, isn't
it?
Have you
same
seen
age
that
as
one?
Ours, I think.
It's about the same age as these here.
Mm-hmm. But not long-legged like these. You got to have a stepladder to get up on these.
Well, by the way, I see it out there growing horses. This one walking by, and it's taller than some of them now. I don't know. But I don't see me like these was larger than that one up there when I seen you years last.
Are these the size of those Texas ponies? Are they already bigger than those?
Oh, Texas ponies.
They
most of them make much higher than that. A lot of them ain't no higher than that.
Right.
Reason they're so hard to ride, they're small and they're tough and they're quick.
Yeah.
Something that's large, you know, it was slower moving, and you had more time, you had to be quick to ride those little Texas ponies. And little old Texas Mule, now he was rough.
Wait a minute now. I hadn't heard of that.
A mule?
Yeah.
Mr. Weaver.
You have never seen a mule?
No, a Texas mule.
Well, it's here. You see, they raise from the Texas pony, raise mules from a Texas pony, just like they raise large horses from to make mules from the large mares that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And they breed that way, you see, to raise a Texas pony, you see. And those little old mules weighed 700, 800, and 600. One weighed, there's a pair of little old mules that fella had with a large French wagon. You've seen, I know, they're made up there in France, Alabama, close to Tennessee line. Then that Hickory wagon, too. You remember that, too, don't you? Two little, one weighed 450 and one weighed 550. Pull a ton of coal out of steep places like that, up there, some little strip pits in Alabama.
Yeah.
I don't see how the little fella's done it.
Yeah.
And the fella had a pair of them. I had some with 800, 900. By the way, it give them all they wanted to come out of there with it.
Yeah.
And I was hauling coal too, and I seen these little fellas. I worked for a fella in the Sparks there in the store in 1917. He sent me over there to haul a load of coal, those three little old mules, and I says, great dinner, Mr. Sparks, that did. He said, you going over there? I said, they'll bring it back for you. And I went over there and the little fellas pulled it out and brought it on for me. I don't know, they just stretched out, looked like. But that. I don't see how they pull that ton of coal.
Mr. Wheeler?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it then, but I believe a little pair small mules like that is just like having tractors now. You see, you get these big tractors, and they weigh so much, they just cut up the ground as they go along.
Yeah, you get too much weight.
You don't need it.
You don't need it.
You don't need it. You need something with a sewing machine.
Well, you take...
That's all you need for most of the stuff you do.
Yeah, well, you take up there, that, you know, clay land is tough. We found that 800 and 900 pound mules was the best. Better than 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 pound mules. Mm-hmm. Fella run a sawmill up there, and we had 800, 900 pound mules. And we had a coal planter, and he didn't know how to run it, and his boy wanted to plant a couple acres of cotton one year.
Yeah. Well, you don't need much to pull a planter.
Well, we had a large 18-inch disc, a 20-inch disc, you know, the wheels. And I mean, the disc was 20 inches round. You know what they are. You still call them that, I reckon, don't you? On your disc cars out here?
Sure.
20 inches. Well, it took a good pair of mules to pull that, and they'd get too hot if you didn't watch them with a hot day. This fella had a 1,400 pound mules that is running a sawmill and haul lumber and logs with. He said to T, if I'd come up there and plant that, I says, I'll lend you the coal planter. You can go ahead and plant that yourself. He said, I don't know how to run it and everything. He said, I'll have someone there to put the seed and fertilizer in there. And he says, if you'll come up there and plant that, me said, I'll cut land for you a day. Use your old cutaway hire. We didn't have tractors back then. And so I told him all right, and I went up there in about 4 hours. I had his, four hours I think it was. I had his cotton and fertilizer and seed all put over his 2 acres, you know, that planter. It laid it all. Put the seed and fertilizer down, and then he covered it up as it went.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, a lot of people didn't. My dad never could run one of them. A lot of them couldn't run them. Well, I was lucky I could guide that just as easy, and I had a good mule to lay off with, and he weighed 860, I think it was. My dad's mule weighed 960, and we worked them together. And that made a good pair, you know, when we wanted to put two together. So that, I went up and planted for him. About 11 o'clock, I came in with the planter, you know, and it was about a half mile to go, you know. This fellow was cutting land out there for him, and he's one of my best friends, you know. He says, I want you to plant all of it for me. I want you to bring your planter back for us. I said, I want you to plant it all. I said, well, I'll go back tomorrow and plant the rest of it. I kidded him a little bit, you know, and asked if he was coming back and cut line for me that afternoon. He said yes, you know, and I kidded him a while. I said, well, you come back and cut the land this afternoon, and I'll go back in the morning and finish plant. What I haven't got planted, I'll plant it for you.
Did you put out the fertilizer in the same trip?
Yeah, all of it together, cold planter.
Now,
I don't know
what the hell the fertilizer.
Well, there's a big hopper up here. Oh, over the planter. Then it had a place that dropped held the seed, and the seed dropped.
Yeah.
Then it, and it's pulled by with a mule.
But I don't know where, I know where the seed hopper was, but I don't know where the fertilizer was.
Well, it was in the fertilizer bin. I was setting up a big box larger than the seed hopper.
Up above it.
Yeah, you didn't use a cold planter.
I've used a cold planter, but
well, you used a Sanger planter. Well, this planted everything, laid off, planted everything. At the same time, you laid it off and put the fertilizer in, then had something would come along and knock a little dirt on that, then the seed went in there, then it come like a gopher, as fixed where it worked this way loose, you know, come along behind and fill that fur up, and there'd be a little ridge like this left in it. One fur. Well, you had to do this. We'd take that big cutaway hire, you know, and cut the land and put that cold planter right behind before it rained. If it rained on it, you couldn't do a very good job. You'd have to take a plow and open up a fur for it.
Yeah.
And we kept the planter behind the cutaway hire all the time. Some were cutting land and some were planting.
Yeah.
So I did all run the planter, and, well, I did a lot of the cutting, too, and planting, too. Then I went to work for myself, you see. I'd cut the land, you know, till I'd get a half a day's planting done, and I'd take the planter and let some rest of them take that pair of mules and the cutter and be cutting some of their land, you see. My oldest brother, my father, and I, we had mules and horses of our own, you see. And when we needed two, we'd work it for us to take a use, to swap around, you know, and I could use them when I needed two, and they could use them when I needed two somewhere in there. And
how'd you cut away hair work?
It worked fine. You cut that line out and plant it, you know, and then take a hire and run right over that in about 5 days before the seed went to coming up and break. If it come a shower of rain on it, be sure and run your hire over it and it break that and the seed would come on up. And the crap grass was bad there. And a whole lot worse than this here. You ain't got no crap grass here once you got up by North Alabama, Tennessee. And so that you'd kill that, you know. I mean, it'd kill all that vegetation that's fixing to come up. Then by that time, it'd get up where you could side it up, you know, and then plow your middles out. And we'd take a scratcher. You've seen scratchers. What called scratcher was crooked teeth, about 5 or 6 out. We'd make a side hard and pull the trash from that and throw the loose dirt towards the cotton or corn, and that wouldn't cover it up so bad. Then by the time you went around one time with that, you could take a large sweep in, and we used a scrape. We didn't use a sweep, we used a scrape.
Oh, really?
And but very few people could set a scrape. When they get, they're easy to close up. And a boy friend of mine, he was farming that used to work some of that sawmill. He farms, you see, too. he could set a scrape, and I learned how to set one from him. I didn't figure that out myself. He did. Because when I was up there in Tennessee, you know, they tried to hire me to run a blacksmith shop. I set some scrapes for them up there, went over to the blacksmith shop, and I didn't want him to think hard. You know, a lot of people don't like you to come around saying things. And my cousin got him to sharpen the sweep. And I told him, I says, he made a mistake on it. I says, cat back and tell him, I said, to hammer that scrape just backwards of what he hammered it before, and I'll put it back in place. My cousin wouldn't cat back over to him, you know. Well, I says, I can't use it like this and show you how I farm and let you all see what kind of work I do. He said, "You can't." I says, "I don't know that man." I says, "He might think I was trying to tend to his business." He says, "He's pretty nice fellow." I says, "Go over there." I said, "Well, I'll go over there and see him and talk with him." And I says, "I'd like to make friends with him anyway." He says, "I didn't get it right for you like you wanted." He says, "I just cannot set a screen." Says, "I've tried and tried." He says, "You go ahead and set it." He was using the same thing I use. He don't learn how, you see. I said, "No," I said, "I'll tell you what you do." I said, "It'd be better for you. You go ahead now, and I'll tell you where to hit it, about how hard to hit it. And you keep on till I tell you to quit." Hammering it there. And then throw it down on the ground and look at it. We did that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have it exactly right. And I said, "Now watch me. I'm going to put it just exactly right for you." And throw it down on the ground. And I went ahead and did that so he'd know how to do it. I didn't want to do blacksmith work. I didn't know enough about it. And that was his line of business. And I don't like to interfere with people's way of making a living like that. So that we went ahead and I threw it down. And I told him, I said, "Now you look, see how this lies there. Then come out there and see when I put it on the plow stock and set it and do some plowing with it and see how it works." Come out there and there's two or three farmers come over and looked at it. There's Joan in the place, you know, and they came out there and talked. And after a while, I was plowing out there for my cousin, you see, and running it then. Come back and said, "We all decided we'd like to put in a blacksmith shop and get you to run it for us. Just what would you do it for?" I said, "I'm not a blacksmith." I says, "I know how to set a sweep and some few things, and that's all." I says, "A lot to learn about blacksmith work." And he said, "Well, we farmers like the way you know how to do fix those things." Well, I fixed them on the farm for myself, you see, and for my dad. And none of the rest of them wouldn't fool with anything like that. Well, I learned from this friend of mine. I live right close to us. I watched him how he said it, you know, and I learned. I couldn't set one, but I'd never set one before. I mean, I'd set some for myself, you know, but for nobody else. So I told him, I said, "Tell you what I'll do." I said, "If you want to put the shop in, and you all didn't cost nothing much for board bill then." I said, "If you all want to give me my board and half of that I make, I'll run it for you." I said, "That's hard work." And they want me to take and run it and pay board, you know. I told them, I said, "When I listen, the main season's over." I said, "I couldn't make a go of it till next spring. And next spring, it would pay all in the spring." But I said, "Nobody's going to have any blacksmiths work much done in the wintertime."
Yeah.
And I said, "I'd just be sitting there." And I said, "I wouldn't have maybe enough to pay my board. And I can't afford to take chances on that." I said, "You all got your living already made." And I said, I haven't. I just worked 1 or 2 years for myself then. I said, "I haven't got mine." And
well, what did a blacksmith do on the off season, Mr.
Williams? Well, they stay around there and there's a little bit of work to do, you know, and catch up with people. Some people had money to go ahead and take their money and have it, let them be a fixing what they want to fix for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like when I made a rule list to never lay my plow harness down in the field like most of them did. Never go off and let the sun shine on unless it's on the mules.
And you what? You plow?
Plow harness and never laid them down in the field.
Yeah.
Way I did, I took them out in the shade if it didn't look like it was going to rain and put them in the shade, boy, they'd be in the shade when I come back from lunch at noon. Then they'd be cool, put on my horses, you see. It wouldn't be hot. And you see, just sitting there in the sun, it'd be the traces and all that metal stuff.
Yeah.
Was hot to them, you see, to put on them. They wasn't used to it from starting in the spring. They couldn't stand those hot harness. And I'd put mine in the shade, and I learned if I'd take my plow stock out the ground, my plow would always plow and never catch the dirt on it. I'd take it out, and turn it bottom side up before I go to lunch. Then I turn it over and put it back, you know, and it'd be slick and I'd just go on out of the way. And the rest of them that let it stay on the ground overnight, a lot of times dirt would kick on the next morning. And if it rained a day or two, it was messed up, sure enough. And they'd take, if it rained a day or two and they didn't get back there and take it out of the ground, it'd be rusted, you know, and they'd be scrubbing it with rocks and different things trying to get that before it slipped, you know, and work good, you know.
Yeah.
And all you had to do is take your plow out and fix it. Well, it may rust a little bit, turn bottom side up, but not much. And when I got through of the two, it went to the barn back in the shed. I never left it in the field.
Where's your implements?
No, I took care of it. I'd use my harness and plows about 2 years, and I'd paint them every time. When I got to finish my crop, I made a rule to do that. And then about 3 years, then I'd sell them for almost what a new set that would cost me. Then I'd go and buy a new set. They'd tell me, say, "Well, those look just like new harness to me." Well, I'd use them about 2 years, and I used them. From 6 o'clock to all through the summer to 8 o'clock at night, usually when I got in. I didn't quit because the sun, till the sun run me in.
Yeah.
6 o'clock, I'd be a mile and a half from home and plow and get up at 4 o'clock. Go to retire about 9 that night and I'd get up. I didn't lose but about 20 pounds every year doing that either. But I'd soon gain it back when I finished my crop. You see, it's short crop, and you have to work extra hard to make anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you get out there and work hard, you can make enough to last you the whole year. And if you don't get a pickup job, you still live. And that's the way I did it. If I got a pickup job, then I could save up a little money and buy what I wanted.
You know, I didn't realize you had all that machinery, Mr. I can't tell you now. My mind is not as good as yours. But it don't seem to me like we had near that much machinery. And I have no recollection of how we put out fertilizer. Just none.
Well, when I was a little fella, at first, they had my dad, most of the time, he wouldn't just get out there and put out fur and plant it, not break his land. You see, we found out, and then see, I studied the agriculture paper all the time and read the physiology and all of that, and I went by a great deal of it. All my father let me, some things he wouldn't let me experiment on. I always did like to experiment and try and think.
What was he?
Well, he had it kind of his old way that he had it, lay it off, you know, and then you drop it with hand, you know, at first, you know, and I was a little fella. Before they got to making this machinery like I'm telling about.
Yeah, the planter.
And planter, had the planter. And the first come out, you put had the planter plant the fertilizer, then they got one plant the seed. Then the coal company come out and the Hoosier. Came out with one to plant both, but the Hoosier wasn't a good one. It was hard to handle. It was too large, and it'd always run digging and go to the plow too deep. Mm-hmm. Want to go too deep, you'd have to pull back on your handle all
day. Yeah.
This coal, we used it 1 year and didn't like it, and we sold it and went and bought sold about half price, you know, just to get rid of it. We went and bought a coal. And that thing, if you could just hold it easy long and just go along and lay off it easy. And if the mule went a little bit wrong, you know, you could turn it this way, kind of like guiding a car.
Yeah.
You could put it that way and make it stay the same distance from that furrow over there and laying off.
Yeah.
And then I had this mule trained good, you know, and I could tell him gee or ha, and he knew what to do. Mm-hmm. And he'd turn that way for me.
Now, did it have that little cutting saying that opened it up a little bit, and
well,
then
you could
dropped
have,
it right in there, and then that big flat curved wheel that
it had a kind of like was called a bull tongue plow.
Yeah.
You did it about like your hand there on the front there. It made that fur.
Oh, I see.
And now that was if you'd cut your land before and not let it rain on it to make that clay run together. You, but if you did, you'd have to take a plow. We'd take a shovel plow and go ahead and lay off in that, bring that planter right in that furrow, you see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would work kind of. We would have to go back and cut it again because it, we didn't have time to do all that. We had to keep that cutaway hard cutting, you know, somewhere else, you know, some of the land all the time. And I was the one bought the first. I was the one bought the first stalk cutter. We just went over to cut the corn stalks and $60. I bought. I was the first one in that country to buy a stalk cutter.
What was that like?
Huh? You hit that run on big wheel and it had a big thing come over this way, rolled over about this large round, and it had blades in it, and
the
blades, and cut them all up about 6 inches apart. The blades set about 6 inches apart, and we go. Take a pair of mules and hook that stalk cutter, you know, and run right straddle of the road, you see. One mule and one middle and the other and another. And just in a little while, cut them up. We didn't have to pick them up and get them out of the way so we could plant it, you know. See, when I was just a little fella, we had to cut those stones and burn them. Mm-hmm. Couldn't let them stay there. It'd be too much in a hurry. Take too long. But after we got to cutting them up with like that, we could take a plow and turn them under, then take, let it stay about a couple of weeks and go back there and cut away hard and cut it to all pieces, you know, and they'd rotten then, you see,
yeah.
They're in the ground right quick, but they wouldn't rotten out on top of the ground, and you couldn't plow your little stuff and tear it all up.
Yeah.
And so, when I bought that, you see, when I went to farm myself, I bought one, and I let them, my brother and my brother-in-laws and and my dad used that, you see, and I used their the cutaway hard belonged to my father. He bought it before I quit, long time before I quit working for him and went to work for himself.
Could you ride that cutaway hard?
Oh, yes, you rode it. It was large thing. It had a place seat back there for you to ride.
Yeah.
Just like a tractor seat.
Yeah.
That's where they learned how to make the tractors from, seats on the tractors from. That yeah. Old cutaway hard,
yeah.
They made them first, just
yeah.
The same thing.
Yeah.
That's where they learned that.
You know, I can't sit on one of them seats now, Mr. Wheeler. It'd kill me.
Well, I'll sit just
so. You know, that, you know, now, right between your legs there, that little thing sticks up there?
Yeah.
Well, now, that was designed, you see, to for your rear end.
Yeah.
But it's designed too well for mine. Yeah. It just rubs me. I
maybe.
Can't stand
no,
it.
You ought to stay still in it. You ought to stay still in the cutaway hard tractor. You can't.
Yeah.
You know, here's a good known me. I would go fox hunting anyway, you know. And I'd go fox hunting, you see, and hunt all night and come back and eat breakfast, and I sure had to work that day because they didn't want me to do that. And they punished me, and I wanted to plow. I didn't want to ride that cutaway hard, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be so sleepy, and we had a little gravel up there, and I'd get on that and smooth ground, you know, I'd almost go to sleep, you see, and nearly sleep, and then I'd hit something, a big rock or hit a little stump and that hard jump up this way and throw me. I'd be near to sleep. And I tried to get him ready to plow so I'd keep me awake, you know, and wouldn't bother me about being up, you know. No, sir, I had to plow because I went to fox hunting that night. That was a punishment they gave me.
Now, what did you use that cutaway harrow for, Mr. Weaver?
What did you use it for?
Uh-huh. Well, where'd you... You broke your land.
Broke the land. And
then you used a harrow?
Yeah, we let it rain on it, you see, and
yeah,
that
let it set a while.
Yeah, and that, the vegetation we'd put under, you see, it'd be kind of rot. Then we'd take the cutaway hard and cut it all up, you know,
yeah.
In about 2 weeks after that. Tried
sure.
To wait 2 weeks, you know,
sure.
let it rain on it. And then it leveled it all off, you know, smooth. And all that vegetation was cut all up in there. And
you double cut it sometimes?
Yeah, we double cut it every piece. We didn't do no, we double cut it. And it's just like an ash bed, you know, until it
yeah.
Rained on it. Then that clay would run together. Then we'd take that, keep that coal planter right behind it, you know, where we cut, you see. And I did, you see, I'd cut what it took me a half a day to plant, you know. I'd cut that, then I'd let some rest of them use that, and I'd take the planter and plant that and tell them to do the same thing, you see. And as soon as I got half a day's work, let them take the planter, and I'd be cutting again.
Well, before you plant it, you'd go ahead and cut it again?
No, I'd cut, I wouldn't cut it again, but I'd cut more land. I wouldn't cut it all at one time.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'd swap work, you know, and some of them be a cutting, you see, and I'd be a planting. I'd usually wanted to done all that planting.
Well,
you see.
How'd you lay it off for your rows, Mr. Wheeler?
Oh, I just hooked up that cold planter, put my mule out there, and laid it off with him, and it put the fertilizer in. I had somebody out there that I passed by. I'd stop and fill the hopper up. And when I filled that up, you know, and put the seed in there if I needed, I'd go around. They'd get about middle way at the end, and I'd have to stop every time I come back.
Yeah.
I could take that cold planter and plant 4 acres a day, easy.
You could plant it
and cover it and everything, and it'd take... If you didn't have that, it'd take about 3 or 4, one dropping corn, one storing fertilizer, and one doing all this other.
Yeah.
And this saved a lot of time.
How'd you store your fertilizer before you got that?
You've seen a horn, you know, that old fertilizer horn. Put a bag of fertilizer on you this way, the big strop around you here, and you'd pick that up and keep that horn just in front of you going this way, and you'd just keep it going. You wouldn't hardly stop to keep. You'd have to get that right quick, you know. And boy, you was tired at night.
Walking
just as fast as you could walk.
Well, that meant you...
You had to store it as fast as someone dropping corn. You could just walk along and drop that corn and stay out of those mules coming behind you and plows, covering it up. You had to get up and go with that store.
You had to be in the front then.
Well, you didn't put a steady stream, you just fertilized each hill?
No, you put a stream out. You kept it going all the time.
You mean that much?
Yeah.
Good man.
We'd put 2 tons to the acre, you know, and it didn't take you too long. You had to go over there.